Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Dog Show Drive with Wayne and Will. I'm Wayne Kavanagh.
You are, and I'm Will Alexander.
Indeed, you are, young William. It's good to see you, buddy. We're going to talk this weekend about judging, not just the things you normally think of, the subtleties that surround it. Also, a great bunch of dog shows in Grace Lake. That's Illinois. And the general state of how we see, how we learn to see. All that and more right here on the Dog Show Drive. There, bud. A little chilly up around these parts. How about you?
Oh, it is some cold this morning. It's so cold. I had to release on my sump area because the water froze and I could hear my pump circulating in the basement. So
not
crazy,
good.
Crazy cold.
Well, Cheryl's a little displeased, I think, that I had a heat system put in the garage because I don't like getting in cold cars. The issue with that is that the heater goes on during the night.
Oh.
And faintly you can hear it in the bedroom. So I'm thinking it's worth every second because who doesn't want to get in a nice warm car in the morning?
Sure, yeah.
You just get in there, boom, and then I can work out there. You know, I can do my man garage stuff out there.
We like hanging out in garages. Men just do. I don't know why we just have this thing.
How's the garage? Heat in the garage. Anyway. It was a big weekend this weekend, Will.
It was a huge weekend, and not just dog shows. Grandpa Will.
Grandpa Will Alexander. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. He Adam is and Katie Bernardin, welcome to the world. Savannah Grace Bernardin on Saturday, which I believe was the January 28th.
Yes. And we know what size she was too, Will.
Baby no, I size. Don't. She's baby size. Baby Someone, size. What was her weight? I don't know. In the picture, she looked about this big.
Well, she's adorable. I saw the picture.
Oh, she's beautiful. I mean, Katie looked beautiful, and Adam looked agitated. Oh, as he was rushing yet. Out to get his wife food because she was starving after having the baby.
Yeah. Now, ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, Adam worked and lived with Will for a very, very long time in his life. So when he says grandfather, it's in air quotes because right. Adam is like his son.
Yeah. So he's one of my boys. And so now I'm Grandpa Will. And Doug Carlson called me and said, does this mean you're a grandpa? I said, yes, but I'm the cool grandpa.
That's right. You got to be the cool grandpa. Well, you're cool and you're a grandpa, so it's automatic.
Exactly.
It's automatic. Exactly. Well, congratulations, Adam and Katie, and everybody else out there who's had great weekends. And yes. That's a great way to have a great weekend. But even though rumor has it that she spent a lot of money on sushi. Is that
she was a little hungry after the birth.
A little sushi craving. Anyway, on with the dog show world. We don't want to get right into hockey now because I was too busy to watch hockey this weekend.
I watched hockey.
Yeah, what did you do this weekend? What, were you home?
I was home this weekend. I just got things. I was gone for 3 weeks, so I needed that weekend just to get things back in order and look at some things. And I had a nice relaxing weekend. I watched some movies. I watched some hockey. I did real stuff. Made some dinners. It was nice.
Wonderful. Nice. You know, we were just talking about this earlier. I judged this weekend at the Cool Cluster, which is an incredible show in Grays Lake, and I think if I wasn't the youngest one on the panel, I was the second youngest one, and I'm exhausted. It's a long week, and I'm exhausted. And I don't know how these guys that judge every single weekend, 3 and 4 shows a weekend, I don't know how they do it.
How they keep up, I know. Wow.
You need that downtime. So taking a weekend off is so important just for our mental and physical health. But boy, oh boy, did I have a good time. It was phenomenal.
I bet.
It was phenomenal. Yeah. Lou Auslan used to say, the great test of a good dog show is the lineup, the quality of the dogs that are there. And man, oh man, it hit it. The school cluster hit it out of the park. I mean, you had the, I don't want to start saying these are the best dogs in the country, but there certainly were the top 10 were there, or at least a bunch of them. Yeah, it was, the lineup was just, I mean, just jaw dropping. And every group too. And yeah. Every group too.
Oh, depth makes it fun, doesn't it? You know?
Yeah, it does. And I judged a bunch of breeds. Unfortunately, I would like to tell you the quality was there in every breed, but it wasn't. My Goldens and Labs are extraordinary. I mean, great depth all the way through. But there were some breeds that I had to get majors out where you go, you know, I guess so, but, yeah. You know. But that seems to be the way of the world where you get to the end, you walk in and go, man, this is powerful. But still, we have some work to do in the classes where we get a lot of dogs being shown that I personally wouldn't, if I was a breeder, I wouldn't want the people who bought them showing them. But I understand they're having fun. They're having a great time. Right. Everybody took their wins and losses well. I had people that didn't even place that were thrilled that came up and thanked me. And
Who wouldn't be thrilled showing Dwayne Kavanaugh?
Do you want my list? But, you know, there was a veterinarian couple who I met the second day. They were older retired veterinarians. They're just lovely little people. And I mean, so sweet. And I noticed them in every ring that I was judging in. And they came up and they said, so I see you're real interested in these breeds. And she said, no, we're just veterinarians and we like the way you put up the functional dogs. And more important, we like the way you're nice with the novices and the puppies. And I don't know why everyone isn't. Why wouldn't you be? I don't think that's special something.
Yeah, how difficult is that to be nice to people, you know?
Yeah. And I always think to myself, if it was my show, my first show, or my second or third show, and some judge was not being pleasant with me or being short with me, would I want to come back? I wonder how many people we make or break, kick out or invite into the sport by that simple 2 minutes.
That's true.
And what you say and do to them. You know, I say, try to say something nice about them and their dog. There's one guy, I remember he had a beautiful boutonniere. And I know right where he got it because I got mine in the same place. And I mentioned that, and we talked about that. And that you could see him just relax. You know, it was just, if it wasn't his first show, it was close. Yeah. And his whole body relaxed and his dog relaxed. It's not hard. No, it's not hard. Just be nice. I saw judges, you know, you see judges all the time that look like they're doing you a favor being in there. And they're cranky. And by the way, I get it. Because if you're judging 3 days a week, 52 weeks a year, you're going to get exhausted and you're going
to
get
exactly. And it's human nature to get frustrated sometimes if you have a class after class where people aren't paying attention or even little things like that. It's human nature, but try your best not to take it out on people. You know, you get in a bad, we all get in bad moods. We all have headaches. We all get stomach aches sometimes and we're tired or achy.
Yep.
But you just gotta, you can't take it out on people. And unfortunately, some people can't hide their feelings.
It's true. Well, I judge, I don't know, 260 dogs or something in 2 days. And every single person, when I give them a ribbon, I say thank you. They all said thank you back with a smile, except one who didn't say anything and walked out. And I thought, well, I'm having a better day than you are. And that's all you got to think to yourself. You got to think, nothing to bother me. It's like when someone cuts you off in traffic, you just go, well, you're having a bad day, not me. Yeah, go ahead.
You give them a Canadian road rage and you pull up beside them and you stare at them sternly. Yeah. That's Canadian road rage.
And then you smile and say, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Like, go on in.
Well, this show was snowing like crazy.
I saw the pictures. Leonardo went outside of a win, and it was in the snow.
And so did the bulldog. So did Dennis with the bulldog. He went out in the snow and got his picture taken. They did their best to show, you know, those candids. Yep. A lot of them did them outside. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Leonardo started, I guess, in his suit, kneeling in a foot of snow. Yeah. But
good picture, though.
Yeah, it's a great picture. And, you know, but it didn't stop anybody. I had very few absentees. And I judged also on Sunday, the last day of a 5-day. So I thought half the entry was going to be absent because it was snowing so much. They all stayed. It was pretty cool. It was really cool. And there are people from all over. You know, there were exhibitors and handlers that came from far, far away because it was a great panel and they do a good job. There's space. The grooming is exceptional. It's right around the rings and the rings are giant. And it's just got a great historical pace and feel to it.
Everything I saw looked great. And it looked like you guys were all having fun. It was a couple group shots, you guys, and it was...
We were having fun. You know, we did have a great time. Steve Keating makes every panel fun.
He's funny.
And we just had a great time. It was a bunch of good judges and a bunch of good people, and we really did enjoy it. And the club was amazing. They do every little thing for you. The lunches were extraordinary. These are the little things that make a dog show. And we're happy when we have a good lunch because we're on our feet all day.
Yeah.
And then they have cars pick you up and take you to the hotel. You have to wait around for shuttles. And a lot of judges, after being there for 4 or 5 days or even 2 or 3, that flew in, they stayed at the local hotel, which is very nice, near the show. And then the last night, they booked them rooms at the airport and had the car service take them to the airport hotel so they could fly out early in the morning.
Yeah.
These are the little touches that make a dog show right. And it was beautiful. There's nothing super fancy about it. It's beautiful, but it just works so well. And
when you think about it, the whole cluster is put on by dog show people. So they know all these little things that they want to experience when they're off judging and working. And
right.
So they know how to treat everybody. So
yeah, rarely do I go to a show where the exhibitors and handlers come up and say, man, this is a really good weekend. You really enjoyed this. It was fun. It was fun. And we had, and I guess the personality set the tone and we had a good time. There's a bunch of good people on the panel. So, and the quality, man, and I'd look up once in a while and it was 3-4 deep, serious dog people watching the judging. You know what I mean? Yeah. People came from all over to watch certain breeds. It was pretty cool.
That's exciting.
Yeah. And I did some of my provisionals for my first fight. The first time I did Legotos, Legoto Amelia. And that was fun. And I had decent entries and everything. So, but the whole show, all 5 days, there was one Cocker Spaniel entered of any variety. And that happens in these, you know, these, some of these breeds, if there's a specialty or something else, you just don't get them. And even in a big show like this, there's going to be those breeds that fool you. And that's how Gordon Setters got into the low entry breed list. You know, not enough of them spread too far and it was too bad. Now I had two specials, but they were both real nice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was fun. And, it was just a great time. A woman, I did the owner handler hound group. And a woman, I don't want to pimp her dogs. Well, you won't know who she is, who had a beautiful wolfhound that I gave the group to. And I mean, beautiful. And we had a chat after. And we had the chat next day. And she had 3 specials and another dog. And she got some other ones. And we did a little talk about these wolfhounds. She'd drag them one out at a time. She'd move them. And she'd bring them back. And we'd go over them. That's what dog shows should be like. You know, I'm not licensed for those, by the way. She wasn't out there pimping her dogs. And by the way, she was the first one to criticize her dogs and talk about other dogs. You need more of that. If you're a judge and you show interest in a breed and you're an exhibitor who is 41 years, this lady's been around in her breed, and she's a parent club mentor. And it meant a lot to have that discussion. And she said, I learned too from you. You know, it was a two-way thing. We had a great time.
That's the way it should go. You know, people bring up new points and reminders. And
don't you want to keep learning, Will? Don't you want to keep? I feel so comfortable in that breed, but I love talking to her about her breed. And we need to do more of that. It's probably discouraged. I don't know. It's too bad.
It, it makes it, when they're that passionate, it makes you want to keep on pushing forward.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
they're not passionate when they just sort of pimp what theirs is the best, the rest are crap. Oh, you don't want to hear that.
You can figure that out in the first minute and then you walk away.
Right.
This woman was just the opposite. She was terrific. So thank you for spending that time. There was also just a good sense of conversation about the dogs in non-disparaging ways by the judges. And I think that comes from having a good quality of respectful judges who aren't crooks, who wanted to talk about, who really enjoy talking about dogs with dog people. It was fun. There was a couple of young dogs in certain breeds that a lot of us really were knocked out by, and we had great discussions about them. I didn't hear anybody ripping on anybody's dog at all. It was just a matter of how cool this was or how cool that was. And some new dogs that are, we saw some new dogs are going to be in their top there of their whatever rankings they want to be in that probably hadn't been seen before. Start the year's fun that way. January shows and you get to see some nice ones. That was a ton of fun. I enjoyed it, Will.
And that's the thing. It sounds like you guys all enjoyed it. And when you see that positive, it's that part is contagious, I find. That's why you find that the exhibitors enjoy themselves too when everybody is positive and you can see you're enjoying what you do, you know?
Yeah.
Like we said, we talked earlier about sometimes you look at a judge and it looks like they're doing you a favor being out there. Well, right. Those are fun people to show to.
And you can see the exhibitors feel, you know, they're just, everybody's bummed. And I get you're going to have a bad day, but man, just try to smile once in a while, you know, and say thank you or say something. I always say good morning and if something else comes up. But I make darn sure that if there's three handlers and one owner exhibitor, that I talk to the owner exhibitor more just so they don't say, hey, he's talking to the handler because, you know, you have to be cautious of that. It's silly. And you shouldn't talk too much and get yelled at for that. It's such a crock. Some people I've known for a million years wanted to go to dinner and I still had another day of judging to do. I couldn't do it because why wouldn't I?
Right.
But
some it's just the perception that people see.
Yeah. So
I think it's a tough call because we all got into this sport for the camaraderie of everybody. And we love dogs, but the camaraderie kept you there and your family kept you there.
So. Yeah. It goes back to my, you know, my days in college when I was a waiter, where I've told this before, when I asked my boss, how do I know if I proof somebody, if I ask for their ID for a drink, you know? And he said, if it crosses your mind, if you say to yourself, should I, you should. And the reverse sort of same thing is true in dogs. If you wonder if you should do that, he said, should I talk to that person? You shouldn't.
Right. If you're questioning yourself, you've already answered the question.
Right.
I find.
For example, Will, there was a dog that was entered that you co-owned, and they didn't enter it under me. Now, we don't co-own a dog together. You showed for me in 2015. You know, that's not 3 months ago. That's the rule. It's 8 years ago. You know, we don't co-own any dogs together. But it wouldn't, the handler of your dog, there's no second thought. Just didn't enter under me.
Right.
It just doesn't look good. It's legal. Sure.
It's legal. Yeah. But it's the familiarity of it all. Everybody knows how close we are. And
yeah, you just have to be, cautious about it. And it's too bad, but you do, you just have to be cautious. If anything, I beat my friends more than anything. And they respect when I do, you know, I never get any crap for it because I found a better dog. Usually. I hope I did. At least in my mind, I did.
Right.
And in some handlers and exhibitors' mind, that's good enough. They might not agree with me, but they'll understand that if I liked something else, well, then I liked something else.
Yeah, well, it's a respect thing.
Yeah.
Canada had their first dog show this weekend.
Pardon me?
Canada had their first dog show of the year this weekend.
Oh, the year. My goodness.
I thought you were
telling me so.
The first dog show of the year. So it was this weekend in Evelyn Kenny Kennel Club in, I believe it's Calgary, Alberta. So, and they got a good entry. They were 600 plus, which is a good entry for us up here. And it looked like they had a great turnout. I saw the pictures. The depth was there. And they had some good judges. It looked like it was fun. Yeah. Ashley Reed was there from Australia. Yvonne Savard was there. I didn't see them all, but I saw some posts, but it looks like they had a great turnout and everybody seemed happy to be back.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's what it's all about. Of course, this is, it was January 31st.
Oh, Mr. Reynolds was there too. That's what I didn't want to. Mr. Reynolds was there adjudicating. Yes.
I saw a photograph of him looking very dapper as always.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's the best. It's it's 1 month into the year for us here in America. And we've already had 4,722 million dog shows. So it was not our first dog show.
Ontario gets their first dog show this weekend in Woodstock, Ontario, the Wildwood Kennel Club. And yours truly is judging the sporting show the first day. So
awesome. Oh, that's wonderful. That's terrific. That'll be fun. That'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, you're buzzing along up there. I'm a little jealous. Not a little. I'm a lot jealous. You'll have your sporting group, your gun dog group done, and your hound group. How's it going? You get half of that group coming up too?
I'll apply for my first half of hounds after I get approved for this last permit. So
yeah. So, and you started what, 3 weeks ago with the whole judging process?
About an hour ago I started. Yeah. No, you get a half a group a year here in Canada when you apply. Yeah. You have a chance at half a group a year.
You get a half a breed every 2 years here.
If you win the arm wrestling match, and then you can answer the 20 questions and rock, paper, scissors. Okay, you can apply.
Rock, paper, scissors. And one hockey question, you've got to get it right too. Hey, speaking of someone passing on, it was Bobby Hull, right?
Yeah. With the Golden Jet passed away this week. Yeah. I think he was what, 84 or 85, I think he was. Yeah. When we went to Chicago to drop the puck with P, we were standing in line at the will call, and Adam Bernardin and Doug Carlson were with me, and Bobby Hull was right in front of me. So I was talking to Bobby Hull, and I turned to the guys and said, "Guys, Bobby Hull." Blank looks on both their faces. They recognize the name, but it was like, but there was Bobby Hull.
Oh, that's funny. Now, you just said that we went to Chicago to drop the puck with P. 99% of our audience in America went, "What the hell does that mean?"
After Miss P won Best Show at Westminster, Rocky Wirtz, who owns the Chicago Blackhawks, huge beagle enthusiast, he has beagles, he invited Miss P and her handler, which was me, to go to the game and drop the puck and hang out with him for the whole game and get to know them. And it was a lot of fun. And we brought a whole entourage with us. As a picture of myself and Cheryl Haley and Doug and Adam and Jan Zeech was there. We're all in the dressing room of the Chicago Blackhawks.
That's just so cool. Yeah. And the ceremony, it's a ceremonial thing, the dropping of the puck.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't actually bring the beagle to the center ice and drop the puck and the game starts. That would be
No, it's ceremonial. She had a little Blackhawks jersey she wore.
Yeah. Pretty cool. How did we get there, Will? How did we get to Bobby Hull? I don't know.
Bobby
That's
Hull.
It's the way we go. You know, it's just anyway, well, I'm glad that you're moving along in your judging because we need you. I can tell you that. You know, we need young bucks like you out there.
Young bucks like myself. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, you know, see, when I was a young buck talking about a guy my age, that was an old man. Yeah. That's true. That was an old man. He's old now. He doesn't know anything.
When I say I was the youngest or at least second youngest person on the panel at Gray's Lake, it's not because it's for a very simple reason. It takes that long.
Yeah.
And if you're a handler or an exhibitor or a breeder and you're done breeding and you have more time and you want to judge, then you start, it takes forever. And by the time you're ready to do 3, 4, 5 groups so you can get hired in our system, you're 75, 80.
Oh, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And it's amazing. Like I did my handling class yesterday and I get a very good amount of dog show people and new people come to my handling class. And Brian Casey and Pat Blenke of Wrath Liberator Dobermans, who is, they're very famous in Doberman world. They come every week and bring these dogs and they're both in their 80s and they're dragging, they're running around the ring with these Dobermans. But they've never judged. And when I sit down and talk to them, because I always hang out with them after the class and chat for a while, just the wealth of knowledge that's there, Wayne, is just,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, but you know, if they start to judge, they'd be 140 in America before they got their first group.
Well, they never wanted to judge. I don't know why. They enjoyed breeding and showing their Dobermans and at a high level for years. Now they've slowed down a bit now because time's catching up to everybody. But man, they to sit and talk to Pat and Brian about dogs. Like it was an education last night for 15 minutes after my class, you know?
Yeah. I'm looking at this list of judges from this weekend. And yeah, it'd be between me and Penny DeCiano, who may be a couple years younger than me. But that's out of, 20 judges or so. Yeah. A couple couldn't make it. I don't think Sean made it down. I don't think
so. Was there a senior's discount then? I'm just kidding.
Maybe that's why you got such a good deal at the hotel. But this is not uncommon at all. Yeah. At all. I'm always one of the youngest ones, unless Jason shows up or Donald Sturz or Michael Faulkner, one of those. But yeah, I'm often one. And that's kind of sad. And my feet hurt, my back hurts, my hand hurts. But it's a hard job. It is physically a hard job. And I just don't think all exhibitors understand how much it takes out of the body to be a judge.
It's physically and mentally draining. It's not just physically draining, it's mentally draining. So.
But what you want to do if you're a new judge is you want to watch Pat Trotter and people like that who have been around forever and know how to do this. She doesn't take more than three steps.
Yeah.
You know, she knows how to keep her book right there. And here, you know, and then there's Charlie Olvis who jogs around the ring following.
He's wandering around. It's almost like he's chasing them down and back. Yeah. I'm going to race you.
Yeah, and maybe that's how he stays in shape. I don't know.
That way.
You know? But yeah, you can judge without moving from a 3-foot circle if you really work at it, you know. But there's those. And when you think about how many dogs you're judging and how much efficiency that takes, it makes a difference. Okay. There was a great course. I read books that no one else reads. This was a study in motion and time and motion and how that relates to economics. And the Plaza Hotel wanted to check people out of their rooms, wanted to be able to check people in sooner. So to do that, you had to have the rooms cleaned faster. And the housekeeping was doing a great job, but with permission, of course, they videotaped them and studied it in slow motion backwards and forwards and realized if they did this pattern, if they started with the bed and then went to the sink or whatever it might be, just the steps you save doing that rather than backtracking just to get everything done because you're flying around, save them so much time that they were able to check people in an hour and a half earlier. So those scales of efficiency in the ring as a judge and as a handler, really. And by the way, when I tell you, when I say, ladies and gentlemen, these 10 specials, stop showing them now. In fact, get out of my way. Move over in the corner and hang out. I even said to one group, I promise you, I will never look in your direction. I'm moving a dog down and back, and I want to see just that, not you throwing liver and baiting your dog on the side for your free stacks. Now, with that said, you want your dog to look decent. And you want them looking good when I'm looking. But when I specifically tell you, I promise you I'm not going to look. Knock it off. If you're a show dog, do you want to stand there for half an hour perfectly? What dog would want to do that?
I know. I was always taught, and that is another hockey analogy, as a handler, save something for the third period. Come in, show your dog. It's all about outline. I teach in my classes outline and timing, your dog's outlining and your timing. Yes. Because your dog doesn't need to be on display the whole time. When I take the dogs around the ring, I always tell them if there's a class of 10, I say, I'm not going to follow one dog entirely around the ring. You guys are going to go by my window of view and make your dog look as good as you can in that window. I said, once you're behind me, I don't give a rat's ass if you gallop back to your spot. I'm not watching. And who cares if the man sitting in ring says, oh, look at that Bernese Mountain Dog is galloping. He's not giving you a ribbon. It's the person in the center of the ring is. So who cares what they think? You're looking. It's line of sight and timing. So don't waste it. Don't waste it. Don't work, work, work. And by the time it's time to win and your dog is tired.
that's exactly what happens. And then at the end, they're falling apart because they're tired of standing still for half an hour.
Save some gas for the third period.
Right. Leave some in the tank, ladies and gentlemen. But I didn't have anybody do a whirligig behind me. Not one person.
I had one person do it in my class last night. And they went, oh, God, I'm sorry. You go sit in the corner until I call you back.
I guess the message is out. Not one person. Now, there was one who wanted to think about it. I could see that she wanted to think about it. So I backed up into the corner so deep I was at the gate that she had no place to go behind me. There's no space to go behind me. It was pretty fun to watch. Nobody tried it. And they had their brush and they had everything ready to go. And I'm like, no. Nowhere to go.
Get off the phone. Your hair looks fine. Just take your dog down and back. There used to be this man up in Canada. His name was Mr. McLaren, a Wirefox Terror man in Scotland. And he judged the sweepstakes. And he was good old Scottish man. And he's taking the dog down and back. He says, take your dog down and back. And the woman did something. He said, lady, don't you listen to me? I said, just take your dog down and back.
Pretty straightforward.
Yep.
And it's pretty straightforward. But yeah, it was interesting. I also had a funny thing happen. I had a bunch of blue roan cockers, English cockers, lined up. And the people sitting right there, and the chairs were full all around, they all wore blue or jeans or dark clothes, this whole crowd of people. And I looked at these people and I said, you're going to have to move your dog somewhere else. Let's move them over here because I can't quite see them. It was like a photographer, you know, telling the judge, step out of the picture because your dark suit's blocking the head. I actually moved them to a different spot because there was such a wall of blue and black behind them.
Oh, that makes I really it couldn't see
their outlines. Yeah. I've never had to do that before. Yeah. There's usually a variety of clothes and stuff, but not that time. I looked at it, there's a black and blue wall of humans. And and you got to do what you got to do. Yeah. And when they say your ring has to be exactly the same for every breed, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. I'm going to change my pattern. I don't care if it's right for that breed and that
well,
ring.
Yeah. If something like there's oftentimes the sun is shining at certain times of day, you've got to change because you just can't see. So
yeah, it's true. Yeah. The lighting in this building is good too. Yeah, it was really fun. It was a great lineup of people too.
I have to tell you something. You have to, I don't care what you people are doing this week. I interviewed Ken McDermott this week.
Yes.
And it's going to be out Friday. Aspiring judges that are still judging, any dog people, they should listen to what Ken has to say. He is such a great interview and he has so much to say about the dogs. I pushed him, prodded and guilted him. He didn't want to do the interview. He was like, I have nothing to say, William, but he has everything to say. It was such a great interview. I hope everybody enjoys it half as much as I enjoyed interviewing him. So
I can't wait to see it.
No, it's going to be great. I think back on the things he said and think, oh, he's right. Oh, he's right. Oh my God, he's right. And it was, he's so modest and so humble and just, and so smart.
Yeah. I had a breeder friend message me and say, and I did not do for their dog. I think I gave it select. So I did do for it. It was a big group. But he messaged me and said, he's a good friend. It's not like somebody just, and he said, I really want your opinion on my bitch. He wasn't there. And I gave him a sort of detailed thing of why I preferred the bitch that I put over his for, you know, his was selected. You know, but, and he wrote back and said, I am so sorry. I never, ever meant to question why. He really wanted to know what I thought about his bitch. He said, I would never do that. He said, in fact, I know what you did and it's probably what I would have done, but what do you really think of her? And he said, she really needs a year, you know? But that kind of respect. And Ken was always that way with his opinions and with owners and handlers and breeders. He's got such a great depth of knowledge. He can answer that question. And that's important. Can you answer that question? Here's another mental thing. I can't wait to hear if he touches on these things. When people come up to you and say, I had a woman come up to me when I was taking pictures at the end of the day. without a dog and said, what did you think of my dog? And I'm like, A, I don't remember you. B, I don't certainly don't remember your dog. How about you give me a hint and tell me what breed you had? You know, if you're focusing on sorting these dogs, you're not going to remember. No. You're using your information. You're using your brain space to focus on the ones you're going to reward. You watch them all equally. You give them all equal time. But then when it comes down to it, now once she told me the dog and the breed, I remember what I didn't like about it real quick. And I was able to nicely explain that to her and she agreed. But that's a tough question to ask a judge.
Yep.
We don't have a memory bank for 260 dogs. You know, it's just not that way. But I can't wait to hear the way Ken addresses those things. And
what got me is he'd start telling a story and he gets so caught up in the moment in the story of the certain dog he was judging. You could see how excited he was getting. Yeah. And then he even said the hair on his arms were standing up thinking yeah. about that moment. Mm-hmm. And that's we all live cool. for those moments, right?
Yeah.
Especially in our sport. It was amazing. It was a great interview. Great interview.
Someone asked me speaking of Ken Terriers, of course, someone asked me if I was going to, what third group I would go for after Sporting Hound. And I said, probably Terrier. And they went, oh, don't do that. All they do is fight. They'll yell at you no matter what you do. And it was a Terrier person who told me that too. Oh, you
crazy. That's because the Terrier people are like their dogs.
Precisely. Exactly. And don't think that's not true. You want to go to a fun specialty? Go to the Irish Setter specialty. Those people can rollick and party and have fun, you know? Yep. I can't imagine going to... There's certain breeds that probably have to have security at their nationals.
Oh, even the two best friends, if they have a bit of a conflict, they're sparring.
Oh, yeah.
they're looking at each other, waiting for them to move an inch. They're sparring and they're best friends. Yep. But they're Terrier no guys. Doubt.
Yeah, it's a different world, right? Yeah. But that's where my interest lies. So if I do go for three groups, that would probably be I don't know.
I want like that to be my third group as well. So,
pardon me.
Terriers will be my third group as well. So,
yeah, I think it's a natural.
I'll do them next week probably. So,
don't you think they go? Wednesday at lunch.
We're just kidding, folks. We're ribbing each other. Well,
it's not that far off. we'll have. You'll have. Two groups in a year, or you can only do one group a year?
You can only do half a group a year.
Oh, a half a group a year?
Half a group a year. So it seems faster, but it's half a group a year. So,
but four groups in half a group a year.
Four groups in 8 years.
So a year a group?
Nope.
I mean, a year, I see what you're
saying. Half a group a year.
So you can have three groups in 6 years.
They can make it. I think once you get your fourth group, you can apply for a group at a time after that.
Right.
But that's still 8 years down the road. So,
yeah. But if you do three groups, that's 6 years, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It could take 6 years to get 12 breeds here. It could. And one of the reasons is because.
Well, you got to be approved. You got to get your permits up here. They don't just say yes. Here you have to go through the process and do your three permit assignments and be questioned on each one of them, and they have to approve you. You know, so
do you have to have competition in those assignments?
Not necessarily in breeds, but you have to have a certain number of dogs. Now that you've got to take into account that. Our numbers up here in Canada are a little different from your numbers down there. But yes, you have to have a certain number of dogs, not necessarily a certain number of dogs in that breed, certain number of dogs that you've adjudicated.
Well, that's a big difference because Gordon Setters now, of course, we're all sad about the fact they're in the low entry list. When I was doing them, I had to judge them three times. Every cluster I went to had one or two. Yeah. And if you had two, one didn't show up, you didn't get any points. You have to have dogs in competition. So that can hold up your provisionals
for sure.
A year or longer.
And that's the same thing with ours, not so much specific breeds, but if up here, if you apply for the Terrier group is a small group. So you might not get your numbers going for half the group. You're hoping that your permit will be at a show that's sizable enough that you will get an entry. Like last year, I was very lucky to judge the sporting group at Trillium, and I judged 175 sporting dogs, and that's big for up here. So yeah. I got my numbers by judging at a show that gets historically good numbers.
There's a big difference between having the numbers in a group and having the numbers in 200 breeds.
Right.
You got to do it 7 times. You got to do it 200. So, you know, anyway, so be it. Different countries, different rules. I'm just darn jealous is what I am. Anyway, Will, I want to talk about judging bad dogs. And I don't mean bad. I should never say that. I mean dogs of less quality than you'd prefer, right?
Right.
A very bright dog woman. I don't think she'll mind if I, well, I'm not concerned. She did she spent forever to do a breed presentation, a PowerPoint, and it's brilliant on her breed. And a very good dog judge applying for that breed used that PowerPoint, that seminar, and this is a judge who gets it, right? And did that breed, judge that breed, and came back to the person who made the presentation and said, I don't get it. And the person who did the presentation said, she realized that she used the best dogs in history in that breed in her presentation. And this poor person said, I didn't see any of those.
Yeah, we haven't seen those dogs yet.
Yeah, and how do you judge lesser quality dogs? That's a real challenge for judges. And I think it sorts the wheat from the chaff. I really think that you've got to be real good in a breed to judge I don't want to say a bunch of bad dogs.
No.
I want to say a bunch of C minuses, which is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
That's the reality of what you're going to get in the classes. And how you can sort those becomes essential. It's not too hard to judge a group or a best in show. They're going to be good ones in there.
Yeah.
But when you have 23 class dogs that, and you're thinking, maybe I don't want to give a major out, you got to sort through stuff. And that's the real test. So this person who did the presentation is going to salt in some not so high quality dogs in their presentation. And that's what I do for my pointer one. I have good ones, then I have not as quality ones. Actually, I did it because it's all I couldn't find enough pictures of good ones. But it worked because you'll get to the point where you're saying, okay, these three aren't great ones, but which ones do you prefer and why? And why?
Right. That's the important part is why. I watched a very smart judge a class of mediocre animals. And they didn't put up the dog I thought they would put up because it was a known dog in very good condition. But in my own opinion, the dog wasn't of great quality, but he presented very well.
Yeah.
And this judge ended up putting up a class animal for the breed over all the specials and whatnot. And afterwards, and it was just it was a common little class animal. And I asked him afterwards, I said, just tell me what your thought process was. He said, well, I've done for the dog that most people do for. And I smacked myself for it because I forgave a lot of things because of his conditioning and his presentation. But when I looked at these 7 or 8 animals, I saw them all and I thought to myself, all right, if I were to start breeding this breed and I was given this choice of animals to begin my breeding program, where would I begin? And that's how we judge the class.
Well, it's a great topic, Will. I had 2 dogs I gave best of breeds to this weekend that were unmade beds. They were in decent condition, but their trim, they were out of coat.
Right.
They had enough coat to do their job. And they just weren't polished. And I mean, not at all. And I can see where some people, in fact, some people said, I'm surprised you did that. And I wasn't the least bit surprised. It was extremely comfortable knowing they were the best one. One just won a national specialty under a judge that I greatly admire. And it was the same thing for me. I know which ones are going to look better in the group. That is not my problem.
No.
And I know which ones are better looking to the ringside. That's not my problem either. No. I'm trying to find the dogs that I would breed to. And these two particular dogs I'd breed to, and they're both bitches, and I would start a breeding program with either one of them. And that goes missed sometimes. They both got beat by hairy dogs.
And it's hard to, like, I understand the situation because our handlers have evolved so much that they've become, like, we've had good handlers for years. And I'm not just talking about professional handlers. I'm talking about breeder-owner handlers that prepare their dogs like nobody. Mm-hmm. But they've evolved so much that they are so good at their craft now that we are spoiled to look at some of these animals that are just mediocre animals that they've turned into pieces of art that you want to hang over your dining room table because they're so beautiful. Doesn't mean they're the best dogs, but they've made them so beautiful for us to look at that sometimes I can see how you don't not necessarily get fooled, but you get distracted into liking this animal, and you've got to adjust your eye, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say. Adjust your eye and look at what's below there. And I always loved when I got a new dog into the kennel, the first bath meant everything to me. The first bath, I put the dog in the tub and I bathed that dog. And that meant I knew exactly what I was seeing there and what I could do with this dog. And that's the thing with handlers. We know what we can do with these dogs. But again, it's got to come down to, especially at the breed level, you're judging breeding stock. So which one of these dogs would you want to improve your breeding stock or start a breeding program with?
And it takes
a haircut's not going to produce a haircut, you know?
That's exactly right. It's not hereditary. Presentation and grooming is not hereditary. There's a plan to it, of course. But you have to have courage, because I knew the group judge I was sending these to.
Yeah, I disagree with you. I don't think it's courage. I think it's intel and knowledge. So.
Well, it is knowledge, but yeah. You have to have the courage because you know you're sending them to the group.
Right.
And that group judge is going to go, what the hell was Kavanaugh thinking? Because he didn't see the other ones.
But sometimes we're going to get that no matter what we put up.
I guess that's true.
For certain people. I think, again, it comes back to what you taught me a year ago with Tom Horner. You're selfish. You've got to be very selfish.
Yeah.
Do what you think is right. So.
Yeah. And by the way, there's two ribbons I'm thinking about all week. I've got to get better at doing that. There's two ribbons that I don't know if I should have switched. And I think if you're a serious judge, that'll happen to you.
I can
make a case for either one. And I did in my head. And obviously I went one way or the other. Often what happens is I'll see those two dogs again. And I'll go, no, I did the right thing.
And let's face it, you have a certain amount of time to make that decision. So, of course, you make a case for each dog, but you still have to make that decision. Mm-hmm. And sometimes two dogs of somewhat equal quality, just stronger in different points, if one performs better, it catches your eye at that moment, and that's your decision because it was so close.
I had to rush through two breeds because I had a dog pee in the ring that was right where the dogs would all stand. I had another one pee on the down and back. I'm not blaming those people. That's a different topic. But we had to stop. And it wasn't a little pee. They were both rivers. And they had to come in and clean and mop. I also had a bunch of novices that day who took a couple extra seconds each, a couple of new ones. I had people entered in the amateur class, which I think is pretty cool, on several breeds as a new class. I think it's new. I guess it is. By the time I got to my allotted time, I also had a dog that was entered twice with two different armbands and different genders, the same dog, and moved up. It was just an issue with the entry thing. And we had to stop and sort that out. I had a move up that we went through the whole process and it didn't show up. So these things take time. And all of a sudden I'm behind and I have to fly through. And I'm thinking, man, this is a great disservice. in America, we really are timed like little robots. Yeah. And that's the way we have judging schedules. In England, there's no judging schedules. You know, it's Labradors followed by, you know, Spinoni. When? Whenever they're over. And you have more time. Now, with more time, you can overthink it and get in trouble.
Right. That's right. I'm just going to go with it. So there's pros and cons. You know?
There are definitely pros and cons. But you can tell the superintendent, and when you're provisional in some breeds, you can ask for more time. You can write down, you can pick anywhere from, I think it's 20 to 30 dogs, or 20, it is 25 to 30 dogs. You can tell the superintendent, I want to be at 30, because you, when you're a provisional, you should, that's what they give you. And if you're flying, you do, you say you want to do 25. And that's really shaving it, man. That's, that is shaving it, to tune change, each dog. That's a little bit of time to sort of make decisions and sort things out. So when you're asked about the details of why you did something, you can't remember it.
Right.
But what you can remember is the general impression you had of that dog. And if you don't form in your head what a silhouette is, what general type is, standing and moving, type is moving too, you'll never get it because you're trying to think of all the parts. I had a sweepstakes judge, a person say they're going to do their first sweepstakes. And they said, what is your advice? And I said, you've been studying this breed? Oh, yeah, every little detail. I said, good, forget all that. And I said, look for the profile. Look for your general impression, stand back and point. Don't sit there and analyze every single hair and bone, because if you haven't judged enough times, you haven't been able to blend that all together. I said, stand back and look at the one that's right profile and point. Yes, do all that other stuff in your head, but at the end of the day, don't overthink it.
Trust yourself.
Trust yourself. Don't start thinking of faults, and because then you'll be a fault.
Oh, and you're just going up the wrong street. You're just going to get yourself in trouble. So,
yeah. And I think that's true when you're rushed, when you have to catch up. If you're good, you know the general profile and shape. Can you then come out of the ring and remember every single bone? Maybe not.
No.
But you know what you did. You know why. I just liked it better. Why? Because its general shape and make was more of a short hair or a beagle, whatever it might be. It's a real mental process. It's not.
People don't realize that. That's why they get so angry watching from outside, and they can't believe why we've done this or why we did that. Well, it's not easy.
You're going through things, and
memory banks are flooding as you're watching certain dogs, and it's a lot of work.
And it was fun doing provisionals. I had provisionals for the first time in some breeds this weekend. I did fine. I was very happy with my choices. But I can't wait to do them 10 more times.
Yeah.
15 more times, 20 more times. It takes that experience of just judging dogs. And this is why it's really hard when you get someone who hasn't been in the ring all that often to be selected to a specialty on the special thing where you don't have to be a judge. And they take forever and they hesitate in their decisions. It takes practice. You can be a great hockey player. You can have great hockey skills. But unless you're playing in a lot of games and it becomes muscle memory and just, you can't even describe how you got to the puck, but you knew how to do it.
Exactly.
It's similar in judging. You just have to have the experience to be able to take these quick snapshots in your head, form that silhouette in your brain, and match that template as best as you can in the time you have allotted.
I get asked a lot in my handling classes because I tend to do a lot of things over and over again. And they'll go, why are we doing this? I always tell them that because I want it to become second nature to you. I want you to walk in and not even think about how you're setting your dog up. Not think, oh, this foot goes here, this foot goes. It's just second nature. So that it just boom, boom, boom. Your chances increase tenfold if it's second nature to you. So
absolutely true. Same as handling, same as judging, same as everything else. But really, you want to put a banner in the entrance to the judge's breakfast and lunch room where you put your suitcases and your coats that says, we're evaluating breeding stock today. That gentle reminder might make the difference in some close ones where you put up the one that's very well presented.
It's so true.
And one you want to breed from. But you can look like a superstar by putting up the fancy, pretty ones that are in perfect condition, because no one's going to argue that.
Right.
But you want to get back to basics.
And like that, the ultimate is to have the best dog in that condition, because then it's you're having the best day of your life, right?
Yeah, isn't that great? And it happened this weekend. And it's happened before. That's just perfect. Yeah. But you can't be. And by the way, when you said about handlers are getting so much better, and again, breeder exhibitors and professional handlers, when I think back to some of the great, great handlers of the past that we cherish so much and were so amazing, they weren't as great at trimmers as some of our people today.
But it's like anything else. They're the pioneers. Like we look back at, you look back and talk about Bobby Hull. Bobby Hull was one of the first players to ever consistently score 50 goals a year. Yeah. Well, that's nothing now, but he was one of the first ones. He was a pioneer. And that's the same in our sport. You know, people try new things and they overachieve than the other people, and then they become who they were. But then they pass it on. So if you look at, I remember when Ricky passed away, and we had this
Ricky who will?
Sorry, Rick Shashudian, and thank we had you. The memorial at Montgomery, and we all started talking. And I forget who said it, but they said that if you look at the pedigrees of all us handlers, it's going to start with Rick. that's where the pedigree that we built back from there, or built on from there. So.
And so much about it is seeing. And one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given in this dog sport, by far, was working for the Forsythes, where we had the best dogs in every breed to look at, to bathe, to trim, to load, to pick up after, to be with, and just to see. If you don't see good dogs, you'll never form that template.
That's right. It's true.
So much depends upon seeing. It's a poem by William Carlos Williams. I'm sure you know it, Will.
I have it right there written on the wall. You didn't see it over my shoulder?
And it says, "So this is the entire poem. It says, so much depends upon the red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens." That's the poem. And it sounds trite and silly if you're not into this kind of thing. But when you picture this red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens, you're seeing these chickens that are white and the feathers going on the wheelbarrow. You see all that color and all that interaction. And that poem pretty much says at the end of that, because I talked to him about it once, he said the poem is all about remembering to see things, remembering to take that minute and look and focus and see things. And if you're not seeing good dogs and good trimmers and good handlers and good owners and good breeders, you're just never going to form that eye to see that rainbarrow, that wet wheelbarrow. Can't say it. I know that sounds a little out there for some of you, but to me,
it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. Don't, you need to see these things. Yeah,
And you need to watch good judges too. You don't think I sit and stare when I see Jim Reynolds in the ring to see how he goes about it, just because the way he works the ring. And there's so many that you walk into a group ring. So you're a judge and you've got enough breeds in the hound group or whatever it might be to judge the owner handler group. And you've never been in it. You've been in a group ring as a handler or an exhibitor all your life. You walk in there to judge and you're like, where do I make them stand? I watch judges do this.
Yeah.
How do I go about this? I can't make a cut because there's not a mat where I want it to be. It's a simple thing like that. The mat's not.
That does go through your head.
It does.
As soon as I arrive at a dog show that I'm judging at, I'll look at that ring and think, okay, where am I going to examine the dogs? Where's my table going to go? Where am I doing my down and back? Where do I want my numbers, my placement numbers, so I'm not walking so far? Like all these things you think about right away, hopefully. And
what about a ramp?
Yeah, a ramp.
Where do you put the ramp? Not on the mat. But if the mat is right at the edge of the ring, there's no space behind the mat for the ramp. So now you've got to put the ramp outside of the ring. In front,
so,
in the middle.
That's what we mostly do up here. So
yeah, and when you do that, and by the way, I mentioned the age, average age of multi-group judges being fairly high. Who gets to move that ramp and that table? There's nobody there. Now, I can tell you that exhibitors and handlers love to help, but that's always awkward coming in the ring to help you move the ramp and then being in the ring to show their dog. The stewards might not be of the age or condition to help you do that. That's a part you didn't think of when you signed up for this judging thing. You guys sit in, my back isn't great, and I had to move ramps and tables all week.
All it takes is that one wrong move, and you are screwed for the day.
My hand is killing me because I picked up a ramp just the wrong way, put pressure on the middle of my hand, in the middle of my palm, in a way that's still bothering me.
We try not to react because we are men.
We are young bucks, Will.
Exactly.
We are young, strong men.
Invincible.
Strong like I move my own ramp.
Invincible men.
Yeah, you've got to know when to ask for help, I guess. And how important is a good steward? Man.
Crucial.
I had several this weekend. I had one amazing. I turned around. Those ribbons were right there in my hand in the exact order. And if there was an owner handler, they knew, they saw the asterisk in the book and they had one of those ready too. Man, what a pleasure. That's called a rare steward.
That makes your life so much easier.
And I had a young, wonderful steward, new at this though. And I pretty much had to do almost everything. It was a cooperative effort. He was learning too. There's way more to
That's
it
how they
than knowing about
them,
dogs and pointing, folks. Way more to it. Yeah. Way more to it. Learn how to see. Anything else, young William?
Well, before we say goodbye, I need to say a few words. A very popular person passed away in Canada this past week, Irene Gillam. She was part of Bob and Irene Gillam. They ran for the years. They ran Canine Dog Show Services, which is a superintendent service up here. Bob was a professional handler for years and a groomer. Bob passed away about, he was also an all-breed judge, passed away, I can't remember how long. It seems like yesterday, but it's not. But Bob and Irene, I have to tell you, when we first started in dogs, they were the first couple that really helped my parents with our setters. They invited us back to their home. They showed us how to trim the dog. They showed us how to set the dog up. And as a judge, I had known Bob. Bob was everybody's dad at the dog show, and Mrs. Gillam was everybody's mom at the dog show. But it didn't matter. You'd walk in that ring, and Bob could be having dinner with Bob all week long. If he didn't like your dog, you were not winning. And he let you know, he'd tell you. He gave me some of my best words of advice when I was out there showing dogs, just about cutting the line sometimes, ease up on your dog, stop pushing so hard. You're not winning today, William, so just stop it. things like that. And but Mrs. Gillam passed away this week, and she had moved back to her home province of Manitoba to be with her son. And it was a big loss for us in Canada. People that remember Irene, they were founders of one of the original members of the Brantford Kennel Club, which was our first Christmas classic. She just meant a lot to a lot of people in this country. And when they ran dog show services, they were looked upon as the service in Canada. And she meant a lot to a lot of people. And I just want to send my condolences out to her family and make sure they know that we remember her. So,
yeah, sorry. Well, those are those people that make an impression that lasts a lifetime. And I think if you're thinking about how you want to be viewed back on the sport, those are the kind of people.
When Mr. Gillam passed away, Mrs. Gillam sent me a package, and it was a package of letters that he had been correspondence with Mrs. Cheever Porter.
Wow.
And it was all about he wanted to breed to Millicent Old Boy. So she sent all this correspondence that they did about breeding to Boy back. It was amazing. It was amazing, all these things to see them, the two letters signed, one by Mrs. Cheever Porter, one by Bob Gillam, and asking about breeding to this dog. And they got the pictures and the pedigrees, and it was great. It was, and it arrived by snail mail, so it was just, it was perfect.
That's really cool. And by the way, I can picture Mrs. Cheever Porter's handwriting. I know it. I know her handwriting. Wow, that goes back a ways.
Yeah.
How cool. Young William, it has been a pleasure talking to you, buddy. And sorry about your loss. And congratulations about being a grandpa. Air quotes, yeah. Grandpa. And all that
cool grandpa.
Yeah, very cool grandpa. And congratulations on getting those breeds approved as a judge. And we look forward to seeing you in the ring because I know you're going to be a great one. So onward and upward, pal.
You as well, Wayne. I can't tell you how much I learned just from our conversations. So,
yeah, me too.
Integral part. All right, guys. Be safe out there now that we've patted each other on the back and told how much we love each other. Oh, man.
We don't take ourselves seriously, though.
No, we take everything serious except for ourselves.
Except for ourselves.
Well, be safe out there, guys, and we'll see you down the road.
Party on, Greg.
No way. Way.
You gotta be paying attention, Doc.
Thanks for the thanks, sir.
So, Ernie can use this in the blooper reel.
That's right.
We love you, Ernie.
Don't put that in, Ernie.
Quit taking yourself so damn seriously.
Thanks, sir.
We didn't mention hockey.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Put that in, Doc.
Man, they want to see it in a blooper anywhere.